Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yad Vigyano Yada Daro Yat Parastvam Yadatmakah Ekat Svijasi Bhutani Bhutayar Evatma Mayaya Yad Vigyano Yadadharo Yat Paras Tvam Yadat Yat Paras Tvam Yadatmakah Ekat Svijasi Bhutani Bhutayar Evatma Mayaya. Yad Vigyano Yadadharo Yad Paras Yadvatmakah Ekas Vijasi Bhutani Bhutayar Evatma Mayaya. The source of knowledge. Yat Adaraha. Under whose protection? Yat Paraha. Under whose subordination? Twam. You. Yat Atmakaha. In what capacity? Ekaha, alone, Svijasi, you are creating Bhutani, the living entities, Bhutai, with the help of the material elements. Eva, certainly, Atma, self, Mayaya, by potency. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear Father, what is the source of your knowledge? Under whose protection are you standing, and under whom are you working? What is your real position? Do you alone create all entities with material elements by your personal energy? Purport. It was known to Sri Narada that Lord Brahma attained creative energy by undergoing severe austerities. As such, he could understand that there was someone else superior to Brahmaji, who invested Brahma with the power of creation. Therefore, Narada asked all the above questions. Discoveries of progressive scientific achievements are therefore not independent. The scientist has to attain the knowledge of a thing already existing by means of the wonderful brain made by someone else. A scientist can work with the help of such an awarded brain, but it is not possible for the scientist to create his own or a similar brain. Therefore, no one is independent in the matter of any creation nor is such creation automatic. Basic fact of spiritual life is that none of us is independent. Therefore, we should recognize the Supreme Lord. Ekalo Ishvara Krishna Arasha Vrityo. This is Krishnadas Kaviraj speaking. Krishna alone is the Supreme Lord. Everybody else is his servant. That includes every finite spirit soul, every jiva, up to Lord Brahma, including all the demigods and all the empowered, talented, mystic, endowed with mystic powers, every living energy, no matter what their capacity is. They're all subordinate to the Supreme Person. That should be obvious to us. If we don't recognize or understand that fact, then we have no standing in spiritual life. Then we're materialists. What differentiates materialists from spiritualists? We may have devotees and impersonalists. Putting them together, they're still different than the materialists. And the materialists are such because they don't recognize that they're not independent, that there is some superior power to which they are subordinate. So, to teach us that, the material energy demonstrates in many graphic ways. You're born in a body in which you're very poor, and you have to struggle to make money. And to make that money, you have to accept someone's service. You have to become subordinate to somebody. Either for economic reasons or for social reasons, even if you want to get an education. It used to be, at least, that students were expected to respect their teachers and consider them spiritual master. Nowadays, that's changing. There's no respect for teachers. And education is just a business. The rich parents send their spoiled children to the best, so-called best schools, where the teachers are underpaid servants, and the children can abuse the teachers with no compunction. Because my parents paid a lot of money to send me to this school, more than you make. You're just a paid servant, and that's their attitude to their teachers. In the elite public schools of India nowadays, private schools, there's no real education with such an attitude. If you want a proper education, you must respect your teachers. You must consider yourself subordinate. What can you learn if you think you know more than your teacher? You're better than your teacher. So, material nature is trying to teach us to be subordinate. The first lesson of spiritual life, that you're not independent. But we're so foolish and stubborn, we can't even learn from material nature. It's not enough that she puts us into so many embarrassing situations. As soon as we get a little bit of opulence, a little bit of power or wealth, then we forget everything. All the lessons we've learned over millions of hundreds of lifetimes at least, being knocked around by material energy, being in the body of a little, worm that has to be in terror constantly that birds are going to come and eat you. Now you're, a rich person in a human body and you think you're independent. So, better we learn once and for all from the Shastra. We don't seem to learn very well from the punishments of Maya, because ignorance comes upon us over and over again. We don't really learn. We learn properly when we receive the Vedic instruction. Tad vigyanartham pariksha lokan karma chitan nirvedam ayat nastya kritat kritena.
This is a very famous verse from the, can't remember which Upanishad. Anyway, it's a very famous verse. We know the second half of it because Prabhupada quotes it very often, but this first half is also there. Pariksha Lokan. A person with a brain and eyes in his head should look around at what you can achieve in this world, what kind of success you can actually obtain. Even by, as a proper Brahmin performing Vedic sacrifices, what can you achieve by karmakanda sacrifices? You can achieve lokan, higher worlds. What is it? Trividyamam somapa papa putapapa. Persons who are learned in the teachings of the three Vedas, but they're karmakantis. They're performing sacrifice for selfish purposes, for material success. Somapa, they even perform the soma sacrifice. It's a great privilege to be allowed to perform the soma sacrifice. You have to be born in a family of proper brahmanas who have performed the soma sacrifice. At least that's the tradition. That's why so few brahmanas nowadays are performing any more soma sacrifices. In Kerala, Nambudiris perform once in a while soma sacrifice. Even that is almost stopped. Because you're not supposed to be allowed to unless your father and his father and his father performed the soma sacrifice. Then your family is family of soma yagis. Somapa. It's a very rare opportunity to perform such a ritual. And then if you drink the soma juice, then you are guaranteed elevation to heaven. Hare Krishna. Trividyama somapa putapapa. And if you can go to heaven, it means that you must have been purified of your material sins. So it seems like a very fortunate thing, position, to have succeeded in the karmakanda process and achieved the success of drinking the soma juice and attaining heaven. Yagyair Ishtva. Having performed Vedic sacrifice, Sargatim Prathayanti, they aspire, these brahmanas aspire for attaining heaven. Te punyama sadyasadindra lokam ashnanti divyan deva bhogan. And then if they're lucky, they attain the kingdom of Indra and they enjoy heavenly pleasures for a long time. And then as Krishna further describes, Kshine punye marchalokam vishanti. When they've used up their pious credits, they come back down to this earth and they just go through the same cycle again. What is achieved even by going to heaven? Just some temporary pleasure. And you use up the credit that gave you that pleasure and again you come back to the same position in the lower worlds. Nothing in the long run is achieved. Even the attainment of the highest planets in the material world. At least if your goal is not liberation, if you're satisfied to stay in this world, no matter where you go, you'll just come back down again. If you don't aspire for liberation. Therefore, Pariksha Lokan, just considering, observing, studying carefully, pondering over what destinations you can possibly achieve in the material world. Nirvedamayat Brahmano. One who is a Brahmana should become disinterested after having considered that whatever you can achieve in this world is just very inferior, and even if it's something you're satisfied with, it's temporary. You cannot keep it forever. Nirvedamayat. Therefore, one who is intelligent should lose his interest. Nasti nivedamayat brahmano. Brahmano. Brahmana doesn't just mean someone who's a caste-born Brahman. It means, Brahmana really means one who has broad intelligence. One who can see the facts as they are. Nirvedam ayat nastya krita pritena. He should lose his interest in material pursuits. Because he should realize, nasti akrita pritena. Akrita. Krita means created. We want to, you cannot achieve by material work, by anything that is created in this world, you cannot achieve the transcendental world that is not created. You cannot use what is merely a material creation to achieve the spiritual world which is not a creation, not created. That's the first half of the verse. Second half you probably know. Tad vigyan artam sagurum eva bigatshit samitpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. To understand what to do, how to achieve immortality, how to achieve liberation, the world that is not created. How to achieve that? To know it, you must go to a spiritual authority. Tadguru mevabhigachit. Samitpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. So the process is described there in very brief. The process of approaching a spiritual master. But the purpose of approaching the spiritual master is to learn how to understand the absolute and how to reach the absolute. The main purpose of a spiritual master is to give enlightenment, to give knowledge. Therefore, when we worship the Guru with the Gayatri Mantra, we chant the Bij, Aing. Aing is the knowledge Bij, because the spiritual master, he may have his own individual loving relationship with Krishna, but his relationship with us is the relationship of teacher and student. And the transmission, the loving exchange, is an exchange of knowledge. It's described in the Taittiriya Upanishad. I can't remember the words, but the guru is, there are two arani sticks. Fever. The sticks that are used for starting the fire. You don't use matches, you're not supposed to use kerosene. You're supposed to, by rubbing the arani sticks, you may not have seen what they actually are. Two rectangular blocks with slits cut into them. And then one rod that's for churning, and you put a rope through the rod. And you pull the rope, and that creates friction between the two blocks. Those are the aranis, arani, those two blocks. The upper one and lower one. So the metaphor is given that the disciple is like the lower block and the guru is the upper block. And the spiritual discussions, the questions and answers between the teacher and the student, that is the churning. And by the friction creating by that churning, by that spiritual discussion, questions and answers, from between the two sticks, the friction creates the light, the fire, which is transcendental knowledge, enlightenment of the disciple. It's a process of communication. So that process is described again in this other Upanishad verse. Guru mevabhi gachet, one should. This is Vedic injunction. Vedas don't demand with threat of punishment. You know, some other religious scriptures may say, obey the law of God or you will go to hell. That's not the way the Vedas work. Not like a master, like the style of management that is commonly practiced in India, management by coercion and by intimidation. You do what I say or I'll destroy you, is the general way of managing things. But there are other styles of management too, by encouragement.
So the Vedas know the art of managing by encouraging, or by offering recommendations. If you do this, it'll be good for you, you'll get so many benefits. Positive instead of negative way of Hare Krishna getting someone to do the right thing. Someone who wants to understand his real situation and go beyond the limitations of what you can achieve in the material world, he should go to a spiritual master. Abhigacchet, this is what we call vidilin, or optative tense in Sanskrit. It is not actually command, it is recommendation. That's how the Vedas speak. They're speaking recommendations. This is what you should do. You decide if you want to do it. Here are the benefits if you do it, and here are the deficits if you don't do it. But it's not a demand, it's a recommendation. You should go to a spiritual master, and you should approach him in the proper way. First of all, he should be the appropriate person to approach. You should know who the spiritual, what the qualifications of the spiritual master are, and then you should meet certain qualifications. So both are described. Samitpani is the qualification of the student. You should be carrying firewood in your hand. Well, that may sound like an anachronism. What do we need firewood for? We don't even use fire or wood to heat our houses anymore. Well, this goes back to the ancient system of Vedic sacrifice. Traditionally, the guru was living in an ashram. The students would come to the ashram, and the business in the ashram was mainly performing sacrifices, worshipping the Lord, learning how to meditate. Simple activity, not the city, out in the country. So the main thing going on in these country ashrams is performing of sacrifice, offering of oblations into the fire. Then they study and they meditate, but the active thing is mostly organizing sacrifices. So if you're going to come to be a student in the ashram, you should come showing that you're ready to do some service. Coming with a serving attitude. I'm here not just to use you, my dear sir. I'm vidyarthi. I'm one who is in need of education. But I understand that to satisfy you and get that enlightenment, I should do some service. Not this, I'll come and I'll buy you by paying tuition. But I will earn your satisfaction by trying to serve you. So that a student should approach the guru, the teacher, with firewood in his hand, meaning he's ready, he's not coming. I may be a rich man's son, but I'm not coming just with my father's, credit card. I'm coming with firewood in my hand, meaning that I'm ready to do menial service. Go sit down. Forget that I'm the king's son or a rich man's son. Now I'm your student, and I'm subordinating myself to your authority. That should be the attitude of the disciple. That having that attitude is his main qualification. If he doesn't have the attitude, an intelligent guru will not accept him as student. And because he's not working for pay, he doesn't have to accept somebody he doesn't want to. This is Brahminical teacher. He doesn't work, he doesn't teach for money. He accepts charity, gifts, but he doesn't get paid from the tuition of the students. And therefore he can teach whoever he wants and refuse unqualified students. If you're a paid teacher, you have to pay whoever they send you. That's second class. That's not really Brahminical. You may be a Brahmin, but a first class Brahmin doesn't take pay for teaching. So that's the qualification of the teacher. But what's mentioned in the verse, Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam, is the qualification of the guru. He should be learned in the Vedic literature, and he should be devoted to the absolute truth. Whether he's an impersonalist, or a Vaishnav, or a worshipper of some demigod, at least he should have dedication to the truth, the way he understands the truth. If he's just in it for the money,
or the reputation or collecting followers, then he's not honest. So anyway, this is the basic process. This is traditional education. Modern education, it may serve some purpose, but it's not brahminical. It's not anywhere near spiritual, certainly. But it's not even brahminical. It may be intellectual. But brahminical education requires this proper dynamics, a proper attitude and proper relationship between student and teacher. That's the whole system. And without that enlightenment that comes from education, we cannot even develop civilized character. We can't become civilized human beings. Okay, so I'll stop there for now. Are there any questions or comments? Hey, Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Demigods have a direct approach to Krishna? They can go and find...
No, generally they cannot. Demigods cannot usually directly approach Krishna. When the when Mother Bhumi was troubled by the demoniac kings who were on her surface, she went to Lord Brahma. She had access to Lord Brahma. But she and all the other demigods wanted to go ask Lord Vishnu what to do. That was Brahma's idea. I don't know what to do. Let's go ask the Supreme Lord. And they went to the Supreme Lord is available in various places. He incarnates in a few places in the material world. But they went to the milk ocean, nearby Lord Brahma's planet. They all went. Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, all the great demigods, and Bhumi Devi went. They were not able to get the direct audience of Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. That, they don't have that privilege. He only appears to them on rare occasions. So if they just go some ordinary problem, they have to ask Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, in this case, sat down on the shore of the milk ocean and also could not personally go and see Vishnu. He sat down on the far shore, the opposite shore, and meditated. And he received the response of Lord Vishnu in his meditation only. And the demigods had to hear it secondhand from Lord Brahma. They weren't allowed, and they usually are not allowed, to have the personal audience of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. Sometimes he comes to help them fight against the demons, and he'll show his incarnation. But when he's not showing a special incarnation, even the demigods cannot see him. They can only communicate indirectly with him. Okay? Yes, sir.
It appears from the Red Bhagavatamrita that the demigods have darshan of Lord Vamana every day.
Not all the demigods. Indra does. Okay, because yes, that's the privilege. That Vamanadev, because Indra, his older brother, Vamanadev, kindly agreed to stay in the court of Indra. So Indra, and maybe others who are there in the court of Indra, can see him. But even then he goes away often. Sometimes he's not there. So there are special circumstances where Krishna shows himself. Those are his incarnations. Krishna incarnated as Vamanadev, and that incarnation is remaining in Swargaloka. So in those cases where the incarnations are still present, then whoever is there can see him. But only when the Lord incarnates, for the duration of the incarnation, is he manifest to everybody.
And Lord Brahma,
yes.
And Lord Brahma, he has darshan of
Yeah, it's called Mahapurusha in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, but that is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Yes, he has privilege. He has special privilege. You know, the Supreme Lord stays with him on Brahmaloka and accepts his offerings. Yes, so some demigods have special arrangements where the Lord and his manifest features, his incarnations, who are staying in the world for a long time sometimes, they give their association to some of their devotees. But in general, the demigods don't have these privileges.
Then why did Lord Brahma have to sit on the other shore of the ocean? Or even the demigods? Indra could have just asked.
Because he can see him? I don't know. It's the pastime, yes?
I mean, your
yes?
Answer, it's for the
yes? Okay, it is just explained, yeah?
Brahma was afraid that
one may leave this planet. So he decided to go to...
Okay. Yes, you understand? If he asked Mahapurusha, the form of Vishnu who lives on Brahmaloka, to take care of the problem, he would leave Brahmaloka to go down to the earth. And Brahma was afraid. He didn't want that to happen. So he went to see Lord Vishnu someplace else, a different form of Vishnu. You know, Lakshya and Akshay Vishnu leave the milk ocean. I don't care about that, but I don't want him to leave Brahmaloka. That was the. That's why he went there. Okay, thank you, Prabhu. Yes, Mother? I qualified that at the end of it. I realized there's exceptions. Those who are not aiming at liberation, the karmis, they have to come back. There are two paths of going in this world, by the darkness and the light. Those who go by the darkness come back again through the moon planet. Those who pass through the sun and go to the higher, you know, the realms beyond Swarga Loka, they can earn liberation. Yes, they can gradually progress. They can go to the grihasthas who are very strict in their vows and perform sacrifices very nicely. They can go to Maharloka, the planets of the sages of the Prajapatis. And those who are completely celibate can go to the planets beyond that, Jano, Tapa, and Satya. And these planets can be achieved gradually, one by one. That's, you know, you can do it that way. And gradually approach liberation. But your aim must be liberation. If you're satisfied with the karmakanda system and you don't want to get out of this world, you won't. So really, what's being described is the karmis, who have no particular interest in leaving this world. If you want to get out of this world, arrangements will be made that even, at least gradually you can do that. It may take several lifetimes. But if you have to have the desire, if you have a sincere desire for liberation, it will be facilitated. Okay, you don't even have to. You can stay on the earth in a human body. You can attain liberation. In fact, it would be easier and quicker to stay a human being, because human life is 100 years. Life on these planets is millions and hundreds of millions of years. So you get it over with. You can achieve your liberation much faster on the earth. So there are various means. You can stay on the earth and follow the direct processes of jnana and bhakti, or you can gradually progress to the higher planets. Either way. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.